in many ways, during his later life, Darwin was a very private man. He lived down in Kent in a relatively isolated place. You could go and visit him, but he was someone who was in some sense out of the melee and mainstream of a lot of urban culture and London life in the 19th century. But Darwin at the same time was very aware of his public reputation, its significance and its importance. He recognized for one thing that in the very act of remaining above controversy, he could play a very special sort of role. And you can see it very clearly in some of the late photographs and portraits of Darwin, where effectively he begins to take on the aura of something of a saint or a sage. Some of the sculptures look almost like he's, you know, he's basically Moses or Noah or something like that. So he has this patriarchal aspect. And that's quite important, I think, to thinking about why Darwin's viewed in this sort of way. And he's very careful at crafting his image when he writes to people. They often ask him quite controversial questions about religion and politics and so forth. And they want to know what, you know, the sage is going to say. Darwin, generally speaking, is quite cagey about how he answers these things. He doesn't want to be seen as just giving one simple answer. But it is also interesting, he's continually aware of this kind of self-image. And this, I think, comes across especially strongly when in the 1870s he decides that he's going to begin to put together some recollections, as he calls them, recollections of the development of his mind and character. I think this has two purposes, really. One is a private purpose for his family. He thinks about how wonderful it would have been if his famous poet grandfather, the Erasmus Darwin, had actually kept such records of his memories. But the other thing is, I think it's an extension of the sort of work that Darwin had been doing in The Descent of Man and some of his other later works. Darwin, in some sense, is looking at himself. And just as Freud later on did a self-analysis, there's a way in which Darwin does his own self-analysis. In his case, of course, it's an evolutionary self-analysis. And he wants to see basically where he comes from and how his skills, his particular talents, relate to those of his father, his grandfather, and those around him. Now, this is something he carries out rather intermittently during the work. In many ways, it's just a charming document of a man who lived through some incredibly interesting and exciting events. But it also, I think, shows that Darwin was never able to stop really thinking about what evolution meant for us and effectively what it meant for him. The most striking statements in it, in many ways, are about religion, because this is where he comes as close to providing his core beliefs about religion as he does anywhere else. It's clear that he finds many of the moral doctrines within aspects of Christianity abhorrent, in particular the idea that if you don't believe in the Christian revelation, you're going to be damned. He finds this, as he says, a damnable doctrine, which are about the strongest words I think Darwin ever used in his whole life. But on the other hand, he's also indicates what he had indicated to many people, that he's not sure. On religious questions, he's very much someone who says, ultimately, I'm an agnostic. I don't really know for sure. I'm going to remain in active doubt about these kinds of questions. And that comes across in all of Darwin's writings, where in the one page of The Origin of Species, you'll find the word creator mentioned. And then 3-4 pages earlier, you'll have discussions which seem to indicate that the idea of a creator is completely superfluous because you just have the laws of nature. And Darwin's always balancing between those. And that comes across very much even in his final testament, which is his autobiography.